This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Rappaport to the rescue with award-winning animal advocate, best-selling author, journalist, and pet products creator, Jill Rappaport.
Hi, I'm Jill Rappaport, and welcome to Rappaport to the Rescue. You know, what I love about this show is the interesting and exciting and unusual guests that I get, with the one common denominator, our love of animals and our need to protect them. We have so many interesting guests in the world of film, TV, fashion, music, all walks of life, and I just love hearing about their fascinating stories, how they got to where they are, and how animals really helped them become the people they truly are today. And that's why I'm so excited about my guest, Nigel Barker. This guy is an internationally renowned photographer, creative director, entrepreneur. You remember the name because he served 17 seasons as photographer and judge on the hit TV show America's Next Top Model, which aired in over 140 countries. He also hosted the competition series The Face, starring alongside supermodel Naomi Campbell. And he also created the VH1 reality show The Shot. His podcast, The Shaken and Stirred Show, is currently in production for its TV release. And his latest hit show, Top Photographer, premiered to great reviews, and it looks like that show will be coming back as well. Now, let's add on his other accomplishments. Nigel Barker has also created a furniture line, a skateboard collection, 3 signature fragrances. He's directed and produced films and documentaries, and his philanthropy work knows no bounds. This guy is a true humanitarian, working with so many charitable organizations, including the Special Olympics, where he serves as a champion ambassador, the Humane Society of the United States, the Humane Society International, Make-A-Wish Foundation, and the Elizabeth Glaser Pediatric AIDS Foundation. Ann Barker is also part of this year's wonderful equine campaign, Seen Through Horses. And did I also mention he is an author, and his latest book is a New York Times bestseller called Models of Influence. When we come back, the man of many talents and jobs, Nigel Barker.
Take a bite out of your competition. Advertise your business with an ad in Pet Life Radio podcasts and radio shows. There is no other pet-related media that is as large and reaches more pet parents and pet lovers than Pet Life Radio. With over 7 million monthly listeners, Pet Life Radio podcasts are available on all major podcast platforms. And our live radio stream goes out to over 250 million subscribers on iHeartRadio, Odyssey, TuneIn, and other streaming apps. For more information on how you can advertise on the number one pet podcast and radio network, visit PetLifeRadio.com/advertise today.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to Rappaport to the Rescue. I'm Jill Rappaport, and a little winded from reading all of my next guest's credits. Wow, what hasn't this guy done? Nigel Barker, so happy to have you here and so nice to finally meet you. And if you heard that whole intro, which I'm hoping you did, Nigel, I can't even believe you have time for this podcast.
Oh, you're very sweet. No, it's a pleasure to be here. Thank you very much.
Well, you are really a Renaissance man, and you truly put the D in diversified. What haven't you done in your career?
There's plenty I haven't done. I mean, I still feel there's a lot ahead of me. You know, there's always things that you strive for. I like to think that anything is possible. You know, I think that it's very easy to pigeonhole yourself. You know, and I always tell people who ask me, don't limit yourself by perhaps the degree you have or the education you have or whatever anybody else might put around you. The world will try and pigeonhole you and tell you you can't do things already. Don't be the one to say that you can't do them yourself. You know, so I guess I'm my best cheerleader as me. And I'm always sort of thinking, well, what crazy thing can I do next? What different thing? What have I not done? So if it's creating a furniture line, if it's coming out my own fragrance.
Books, documentaries, TV shows, you've done it all.
I've done a lot of things. I've done a lot of different things. So there's a few things up my sleeve that I'm working on still. But I guess the bigger part of it is that nothing is off the table.
That is so great. And even if somebody gives you a no at this point in your life, and I probably would think that they don't. You're at the level where I bet very few people say no to you, Nigel. But if they do, how do you handle rejection?
Yeah, it doesn't happen very often.
I love that. I wish that would apply to me.
It's the truth of the matter. But it's also less to do with rejection. It's the way I kind of look at it. It's not so much that people don't say no. They may not necessarily agree, or they may not think that now's the time. But that doesn't mean you've been rejected. I guess it's also how you look at it, right? So I think it's very easy for, in this day and age, for people to feel rejected or to feel that they haven't got enough likes, for example. I mean, we live in a sort of social media world where you post something or do something, and if people don't react to it in a positive manner or just in any manner, then you feel that maybe it wasn't a good idea or it wasn't great or people didn't appreciate it or what have you. And I don't run my world like that. I'm very much my own editor, my own kind of, I kind of decide whether I want to do something or not based on whether I want to do it. But I think that's also the purview of an artist in general. I think, you know, to be a successful artist or just to be an artist, you have to be the one who paints for yourself. You don't paint or shoot or photograph or do whatever it is for someone else. Because if you do, you're really working for hire. You're not really creating because that's how you're driven to be. So otherwise, you would never know as an artist when to put the paintbrush down.
And you know what's amazing about you, Nigel? You know, you've worked in this high fashion world for so many years with the biggest superstars in the industry, like Naomi Campbell. And there's been so much criticism today about when we look at a photo, are we really looking at something that's real? Because there is so much retouching. We don't even know what to believe when we see a photo anymore.
Yeah, but that goes back to so many things. I think that people get overexcited about a lot of these things. What are we trying to believe in anyway? I mean, do you like the picture? Do you not like the picture? It's pretty simple. If it's about belief, then, you know, that's not really the sort of the world of fashion and fantasy and imagination and dream and, you know, what a lot of what I work in is about. Yes, if it's about realism and about sort of photojournalism, taking pictures of people and it's a politician or something, you know, you've somehow morphed them, that's perhaps a different world. So it really depends on what we're talking about. You know, I say, look, first of all, any photographer worth their salt knows how to manage the light. And with the light, you can change the shape of someone's face and change the way they look and feel. You know, you can use shadow to create mystery. All of these things change the perception of how someone reacts to a photograph. So you could argue that anybody who does anything, even remotely artistic to a photograph, is changing how you perceive that picture to be, and therefore changing your thoughts.
And what about the image for young girls? You have surrounded yourself, and you've been so successful in the world of fashion and beauty, surrounded by the most beautiful women in the world on your shows. And every show that has the Nigel Barker touch seems to have the golden touch. And so many young girls today look at shows like that in admiration, but also envy. And that can be a little dangerous, right?
I mean, look, again, there's nothing new here. There's nothing that is out of the ordinary and it's going to change. I think when you look back at sort of shows from you know, that I've worked on from back in the day, it's easy to look back at them with sort of hindsight and say, oh, we wouldn't say that now, we wouldn't do that now. But it wasn't now. You know, those were done sort of 20 years ago and things are constantly in flux. And oftentimes, if you don't have the conversation, if you don't have these things come up in the first place, then they don't get discussed and they don't happen. Yes, models certainly were too skinny, were not diversified enough, were very much one type, and still are, to many respects, that same way. But it's changing and has changed. A large part has changed because of shows like Top Model, where we brought up these conversations and we started to make things different and we started to include full-figured models and petite models and models of color and all the rest of it. Where, I mean, did we do it perfectly? No, of course not. We didn't. Did we try? Yeah. Did we think we were doing it right? We tried. But again, what was right then isn't right now, and so on and so forth. And I do think that if you don't have any kind of communication or dialogue on these things, nothing ever gets done. You know, so sometimes these things have to get out there, and it's not always the healthiest thing. It's not always the best thing, but it is what it is. And, you know, and it's also drawn by consumer, right? So at the end of the day, the advertising industry, they're not necessarily out there to create a problem. They're actually out there to market to people in a way that they think that's going to react to them. So part of it is cultural issues that we have about as far as what culturally we think is normal. And that's not just created by the fashion industry. That's also created by all of us and how we expect people to be. And, you know, whether we consider things to, you know, in a conservative manner or a more liberal manner, and, you know, what's okay in Europe isn't okay in the US, or isn't okay in Asia, or isn't okay in Africa or wherever. So there are different you know, sort of moral standards as well that apply across all these things, you know, including things like nudity and things like that.
You've achieved incredible success and people look up to you and they respect you. And yet you also work with teams of people and you have to be open to hearing how they feel. Is that something that has come easy for you? Because you seem like a man of conviction. You have your own ideas and you know what you want. So when you're working with teams as a creative force, is that hard for you or do you love that part of the business?
It's always been a part of the business. And so I think that from very early on, you learn about working in a team. I've told people this all the time that I'm not a one-man band. You know, I might be the front man, but I'm not the band. And when you obviously bring me into a picture, I do my piece and that might be more heavy lifting than certain other people in that particular scenario, but in other times it may not be. And I think that it really depends on the job, but every job, certainly if, for example, it's a fashion shoot, the makeup, the hair, the styling, you know, all of those parts play a huge role and are incredibly important. And I'm not doing those pieces. I'm helping to direct them. I'm giving my opinion on them. And, you know, we work in a collaborative way, but likewise, they also want the pictures to turn out right and or the film to look good and the lighting to be beautiful and all these different pieces, and which is our bigger part. Just the way the business is organized is that the jobs come mostly through us. So we are the ones who do the hiring. And so for that reason, you end up being the boss. But really on set, a lot of that becomes more democratized. And despite the fact you are the boss, you don't necessarily behave in that manner because you realize when you're working with creatives in a creative world that you want to give people creative freedom in order to do their best work. And so it doesn't actually, you know, benefit anyone to stifle that.
Because you have dabbled and really been involved in every facet of the business, what excites you the most? What makes you get up in the morning and think, I can't wait to jump into this?
You know, you have to lead your life with passion. And I'm excited by the smallest of things, to be honest. It doesn't have to be some kind of big thing that that gets me going. It really is just the sort of joy of life in many ways and doing things that, you know, that are creative in general. I get excited, you know, making breakfast in the morning if I get the chance to do so. You know, I get excited to make dinner at night.
And to do this podcast.
It doesn't matter what it is, you know.
Well, then answer.
There's a great way to feel and to sort of stop and smell the roses, right? I think it is that one of the things that we have to do in my business is be very aware of what's happening right here, right now.
Right.
That's the job. You know, I'm about capturing the moment as it's happening. And so therefore you have to be focused on what's happening and not too aware of what happened or what's about to happen.
And what you can't change.
You know, it's right here and that's what I'm working with. And so that piece of it means that you know, you are just super excited about all the things. So if I'm photographing some inanimate object, I kind of, you know, you create a story around it and you get excited by what's happening and what's about to happen. And your mind sets up, you know, about the angles, the light, the texture, the sound that it might make, or whether it's cold or hot, or all the different things. And those all play a part of what makes it exciting.
Who have been some of the most exciting people you've worked with?
I mean, look, I've been very privileged and got to work with some amazing artists and people and personalities over the years. I mean, I think, you know, there's a few standouts for sure. Taylor Swift is someone who I worked with quite a lot and did a book on her at one point. And you know, she's someone who, not surprisingly, even in her youth, but she's a young woman still, but when she was much younger, I think talking about over a decade ago when I first started working with her, you could tell that she was someone who was a major, major talent and was able to just work in ways that was way above her years even then. So sometimes people, you see someone who's a creative or an artist and it can seem frivolous. You know, like you can meet an actor or you may say, oh, well, they just act. They think they're so important or whatever. But the really good ones are so much more. They're brilliant brains and they're amazing people. And it's really difficult to be at the top of your game in any profession. And that also goes for models. That's why, you know, you may think, oh, just a pretty face. Not if you're a supermodel. If you become a supermodel, the only way for that to happen is that you are actually a pretty darn smart business person yourself, you know, because you cannot juggle that kind of a sort of workload. And somehow the hard part is then you also have to just be the model too. But to get to that level at any sort of top level of business requires in anything, acting, you know, musician, anything. It takes an incredible mind. And I've, you know, so she was one of those people.
You keep in touch with Taylor? Do you talk to her?
No, not really at this point. That job came through Sony, who I had a very long-standing deal with. I worked for them for about a decade nonstop and got the opportunity to work with a lot of their big stars, you know, Justin Timberlake and Peyton Manning and people like that as well?
No, it's just amazing because Taylor literally is, she's the most famous person in the world. You know, she could go on Twitter right now and on Instagram and tell us who to vote for.
And of course, as the whole world knows now, she is endorsing Kamala Harris.
That level of fame is so unbelievable. And the fact that you got to work with her on such a personal and close manner.
100%. I agree. But, you know, at the same time, I just got back from a trip in Africa. I was in Sierra Leone, and I got to photograph young girls in villages in the middle of nowhere. They're miles, you know, hundreds of miles away out of from the capital, Freetown, in sort of jungle areas and really difficult to get to, for, you know, multiple four-wheel drive cars for hours up and down, going at a few miles an hour, trying to get to these still places. And the people I met there and the women I photographed and the stories they had, and they're all as important to me in many ways. And that's the beauty of what I get to do, is that one day I'm photographing someone uber famous and the next day I'm photographing someone you've never heard of. And it doesn't make any difference really to me on how I approach the job.
For you, it's not about ever being starstruck. It's about being heartstruck.
It's about telling the story. You know, it's about finding that story. It's about the narrative of who they are and what they are. And my job is as a storyteller. So what's the story I'm wanting to tell? How am I going to tell it? And what's the story that they want to tell? How does that all marry?
Well, besides your incredible accomplishments and your talent, what I was drawn to is your love of animals.
My name's Barker, for goodness sakes. So
either like Barker, dog, like I the think. Dog, or Bob Barker, right?
Maybe both.
Yeah, tell us about that, when that began and why animals, dogs, horses.
And you worked so closely and passionately with this wonderful campaign that I've been involved with, Seen Through Horses.
Why they resonate in your heart so much?
I grew up in a family of animal lovers. You know, I mean, literally, I grew up with, at one point, I think we had over, I think, like 15, 16 dogs in our house. You know, my parents, my mother specifically, and my grandmother used to bring in just about every stray they would find in the streets of London and give them a home. So we had a sort of cacophony of crazy animals in our house, which we used to love. Most of them would live under this big staircase. I came from a privileged background. My father was a financial consultant, and you know, my mother had been a model in her day and what have you. And we had this big townhouse in central London, a big five-story affair, big grand house. But my parents turned it into like an animal house. literally. And, you know, we underneath this huge grand stairwell, all these dogs would sleep. And I would often just go down there and like sort of Mowgli sleep with the dogs, because we had big Rhodesian Ridgebacks. We had boxers.
Were they rescues back then?
Rescues, yeah, rescues. And big dogs that people didn't want, and half-breed dogs, and, you know, all that kind of stuff that back then. It was a bit different. You know, and as a kid, I didn't know what I was dealing with. I just was like, oh, this is all fun and games. And I used to love trying to take as many of the dogs out on a walk as I could at one time, and sort of being dragged around Hyde Park by these massive animals. But I kind of grew up with that. We also had budgerigars, parrots, rabbits, gerbils, cats. And these animals, as we know, lived for a lot, many can live for some time. So we had a cat that, you know, Miss Otis, who lived for 24 years. And so she was with me my entire life, you know, and things like that. So you kind of grow up with that sort of sensitivity. In fact, this is something that not that many people actually know. People are aware of the fact that I had really, at one point, sort of looked like I was going to go to medical school. And I had applied to medical school, and that was where my direction
was. Did
you
get in?
But yeah, I got in and did all that. But I did, but I ended up dropping out because I started modeling and my life took a complete different turn. Basically, before that happened, what I'd actually wanted to do was zoology. And I had always loved Sir David Attenborough, and had been a huge fan of him and his life and his life's work. And I really, I just wanted to be him. And if there was anyone else I probably could be in my life, it would be to be Sir David Attenborough. And so, you know, just all his shows that he created, Survival, Planet Earth, all those things were just so extraordinary. But I remember telling my father, and he was like, I'm not going to have you become a zoologist. You're going to become a zookeeper, work in the zoo and just feed the elephants or something. And that's not a job for a young man who's had a very expensive education. So, you know, I was sort of convinced that I should do medicine, and I wasn't really smart enough to become a vet. It was even harder to become a vet.
That was my dream too, Nigel, and I was terrible in math.
So I was really good at math, but you have to be really good at math. It's like the best of the best. Our best people out there work on animals, by the way, everyone. So our animals are very lucky in many ways, but I guess there's far more anatomies to learn. So anyway, then my career took a different shift, and, you know, I've spent time working as an ambassador with the Humane Society. You know, I've done documentaries on the seal hunt, and I've also done you know, work with Save the Sharks. So the arch enemy of the seal is the shark. So I don't pick sides. I'm about animals regardless of their ferocity or whether they like one another or not. It's about, you know, doing the right thing and being humane and caring. And just in general, that's my life ethos, to be honest. It doesn't really matter whether it's animals or humans, actually, for me. It's about being caring and being understanding and being a good person. It's, you know, what's the right thing to do, you know, and why would we harm an animal? Why would we treat them poorly? Likewise, why would we do that to a human?
Well, it's amazing because what's going on in the world of adoption or rescue, it's the worst it's been in decades. And I go to my local shelter every week, and I've been featuring the underdogs of the shelter world. I've gotten 14 out of the 18 in my campaign a home, but it's truly heartbreaking. And I know for someone like you, you know, animals, they can't talk. You know, we are their voice, and they need us to save them, protect them, and thank goodness for a person of your stature doing what you're doing. Tell me about the animals that you have in your life right now and what they mean to you.
Well, we have a few right now. We have a dog called Memphis who was rescued from a puppy farm, and he's from Tennessee. So his name is Memphis, and he's a, you know, funny old fellow. He's got two broken front legs with the Chanel titanium, and he had a broken back, and he's all fixed up, and he's the fastest thing you'll ever see. But when he goes to lie down, he looks like he's already been knocked over by a car. The poor little thing, his old body is all twisted, but he's the most sweetest little soul you've ever seen. And he's mended himself so well that you literally would have no idea. And he's got the most incredible nose on him you've ever seen. He could have been a sniffer dog had he had another life, because he can literally find anything and see it, you know, in pitch black, no matter how far away you throw it. And he knows one ball from another if there's 1,000 similar balls. You know, he got the nose for it. We have a cat called Stella, who is also a rescue, and a friend of mine who's a big rescue animal advocate called Loretta Stadler found this cat for us, and it was really for my daughter who wanted a kitten, and so she found us a rescue, and so we have Stella. And we have Rocky, who's a Cuban rock iguana as well, who's now sort of 4 foot giant.
Wow. And also your love of horses, Nigel.
I love all animals, and luckily enough I get to work with horses once in a while. They're such a beautiful, regal animal, and obviously they are somewhat domesticated, so they come across our fashion perspective. We get to utilize them as beautiful animals, and I got to shoot for Art Bodega magazine in Wellington just recently and went down there to photograph all these riders with their incredible horses. And
oh, amazing. Yeah.
They were very beautiful. I mean, you know, they're such an elegant and incredible animal. I've also photographed them with one of my other favorite subjects, which is my wife and my sister-in-law, which are called the Chin Twins on Instagram. We've shot many times with horses bareback riding and also just doing yoga with horses. And they're sort of yoga experts, yoga and dancers. And there's something about a horse which, they're such an incredibly powerful animal, yet they're such a humble animal at the same time. And they have the grace, yet total power. So it's those things, those juxtapositions make them very special. And then, you know, they can be obviously flighty, but they can also be rock steady. So there's all these different personalities to them that are amazing and appear somewhat human-like in their personality traits. I think that also helps us see ourselves in them, you know?
Well, you know, Nigel, you're so creative, and I would be a fool not to take this opportunity to pitch this idea to you, but we should do a show about animals and rescue. I have a great idea called Mutt Makeover.
There you go. Okay. Let me know. You know, on Mutt Makeover, I was commissioned at one point by the ASPCA to do a campaign for them on similar to what you were talking about, to help dogs get adopted. And the campaign that we came up with was that at the time, pretty much all dogs with the ASPCA were being photographed in their kennels, but they were always behind bars. And when I first looked at all the animals, and this was, you know, over a decade ago too, they showed me all the pictures, and I'm like, well, they're like, look, we want to do a campaign to help these animals get adopted. What would you like? Would you do something with us? And they knew I was working with the Humane Society. And I said, sure, let me have a look. And I'm like, well, the first thing I would say is that they look like a bunch of criminals behind bars. Like, the only time you see anyone behind bars is if they've been arrested. So if you're going to put a thuggish pit bull dog behind bars with, like, sort of looking like a bit forlorn, it doesn't look very appealing. So what we need to do is take them from around the bars, put them in front of the bars, or take them outside, play with them, let them be a dog, and then take their photograph. And then we'll see what happens. Yeah.
That's my concept. I started this on the Today Show with Bow to Wow, but I went to the shelters and these animals who have been sitting there, some so sadly for months and years, you give them a makeover, you groom them, you make them over and you bring them out. And I had a 100% adoption record, but I think there's a way we could do it now, these extreme makeovers. And then also we would be the mutt matchmakers. Then we would find the perfect match. Aren't those great ideas, Nigel?
It's a great idea. It's a great idea.
See, I'm telling you, I'm going to be talking to you about this.
Please do. Have your people call my people.
Oh, believe me, my dogs will call your dogs.
How's there you that? Go. We'll look out for the howl.
And by the way, the reason I'm so passionate about this, any form of entertainment, I always say with rescue and adoption, you got to give the light always at the end of the tunnel. And you want to make it a happy, entertaining show while at the same time saving lives. And we need these ideas now more than ever.
Couldn't agree more. That's my same mission with Humane Society when I created a documentary on the seal hunt. All previous films had been about the actual killing of the seals, which is very brutal and graphic, and no one can really stomach it, even the people who work there. So I'm like, well, this is not really a campaign then. If no one's going to look at it, see it, no one really wants to hear about it. Everyone knows it's bad and wrong. So that's not going to work. What we have to do is do a celebration of the animal, talk about its life, talk about the birth of the animal and incredible migration that they make across the ice and what the ice looks like, and make them fall in love with this animal all over again.
That's right.
And restart the relationship. And at that point, you won't need to tell them not to kill it. They're not going to want to kill it because they love it. And so if you love something, you're not going to kill it. But if you don't really know something because you're scared to even think about it, then perhaps it's easier to be out of sight, out of mind. And so we have to reprogram what we're thinking and how we do it.
And especially with horses. I have wanted to do a documentary for years about the horrific side of horse racing. I wanted to call it In a Race for Their Lives, because you know what's happening with these racehorses and how many are being put down at 2-3 years old. And I did a story on it where 65 horses were living off rainwater and wood for survival. And they were literally discarded because they had no more use on the track. So they were thrown into a farm upstate and many didn't make it. So this is my goal, my dream. I mean, we have to be able to educate people. We have to be able to make a difference, but you don't want to freak people out and depress them, just like what you're saying.
Right.
There's a way to do it. You take them in the back door and you end up walking out the front.
Right. Agreed.
And when I not only read about all your philanthropic work, but your charitable organizations that you work with, everything you do to help and give back on top of your incredible career, I said, I got to get this guy on my show immediately. You're truly amazing, Nigel. I don't even know how you had time to do this today. I'm so happy you're here. Cannot thank you enough for being on Rappaport to the Rescue.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure. And I look forward to seeing you again soon.
And believe me, I will be reaching out to your people. I don't have people. It will be me.
I look forward to it.
Okay. Thank you, Nigel. Good luck with everything.
All the best. Take care.
And thanks to all of you for tuning in today to Rappaport to the Rescue.
Let's Talk Pets every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.